So that brings us next, agenda item six, discussion and possible action on report from technical consultant, 6.1, regional planning updates. Tony Smith. I got it right.
Good morning, everybody. I'm not proposing any amendments to the 21 plan. So moved. Thank you for the humor. It's good to actually get a response from a joke. Today I'm going to go through, I'm not looking for any direct actions from the planning group today. As John just mentioned, we are on the track towards developing the initially prepared plan, the IPP, our draft. That is due on March 3rd. And we are consultant team. Chuen Jung is here with me. She is with Alan, Plummer. She is with Plummer on our consultant team and is one of our experts on advanced conservation, which is one of the subjects I'm going to fly at a high level with you today. And we're going to get into this afternoon at the scope of work committee. Before I get into all that, just want to give a brief highlight on our budget picture. Our budget picture is good. We've updated our amendments to the full contract amount, except for some remaining allocations from the Water Development Board that I think are going to happen. We're all set and blowing and going with our budget and set up. And we were approved for Task 5B, have our notice proceed. We're evaluating water management strategies as we speak. And that's a picture as of the end of July, and we'll have more updated pictures going forward. We've been working through some stuff with the Water Development Board. So today, the focus is going to be on three areas. There is a subsection in Chapter 5. Chapter 5 is about water management strategies. It's the thickest chapter in the whole plan. It's the big meat of the thing. We have plans for every entity within the region, and that's all embedded within Chapter 5 and its appendices. But there's a subsection that's required that I'm going to talk with you about today at a high level, and that subsection is with regards to advanced water conservation. Secondly, I'm going to give you a brief outline of Chapter 9, which has been slightly tweaked and revised and has some new material in it for this go around, some of which we're still working on because it involves surveys. And then Chapter 10, give you an outline, a draft of which was also placed in your packets. So you should have a draft for the Chapter 5 subsection language as well as the Chapter 10 language. And Chapter 9, we're still working on. So let's talk about conservation measures for a few minutes. 31 TAC 357.1036. Is where the administrative code kind of lays out and defines water conservation measures. Their practices, techniques, programs, and technologies that'll protect water resources, reduce the consumption of water, reduce the loss of water, improve the efficiencies in our use of water, and they can be presented as water management strategies in regional water plans so that a water supply is made available for future alternative uses. And for planning purposes and regional planning, water conservation measures do not include reservoirs or aquifer storage and recovery or other types of projects that develop new water supplies. So it's specifically looking at water conservation in its purest sense there. Reuse wouldn't count as water conservation. The IPP, and a little bit about this subchapter. The IPP and final adopted regional water plan must include a separate subchapter. That's spelled out in the administrative code. It must consolidate and present the conservation recommendations, including considerations of applicable best management practices appropriate for the region. And I say region. If applicable, it must summarize the reasons that conservation strategies were not recommended for a given WUG having an identified water need. And then the Administrative Code also defines that water reuse is a unique strategy type separate from conservation, and for planning purposes, conservation measures do not include those new supplies. So going into a little bit of detail about our conservation approach. Now, the Water Conservation Advisory Council in May of this year issued a letter with some recommendations in it. And one of those recommendations, they kind of changed from what has historically been done in the past. It's historically been done in the past as kind of a target amount that was, well, all I have is hearsay, but it was a negotiated amount kind of set upon as a sweet spot of around 140 GPCD. And over time, the Brazos G Planning Group has utilized that 140 GPCD as kind of a target, saying, look, if you're over and above 140, then the recommended the approach to developing a conservation amount, a strategy for a conservation amount, would be to reduce your GPCD by 1% annually until that 140's GPCD is met, and then hold that constant. There's variation in that, in the sense that over in Williamson County, Brazos G, in the previous planning cycles, Brazos G said, all right, for Williamson County, we're not going to use 140, we're going to use 120. Our slight modification that we're proposing to the Scope of Work Committee this afternoon is to allow for the WUGs, if they provide input saying that's not realistic, we can't do that, we are using X, we already have a plan and they have supporting documentation for their conservation strategy. As we've talked about many a time, we're trying to engage with the WUGs and get their input. And if we get their input, for example, the city of Georgetown said that 120 isn't a reasonable factor, but they do have a water conservation strategy in their integrated water supply plan, water resources plan, for roughly around 15,000 acre feet and methods to support that, then we can take that information and integrate that. But for those areas, for somebody that doesn't speak up in Williamson County, as we wave this at folks, that we would stick with the default 120 unless we get input. And this would basically be applied for everybody that's above 140. And that's kind of the idea. In our that's kind of regarding the methodology on the municipal side. And then we also, within the document in the subsection, we talk about best management practices. We use water development reports to identify best management practices that are typically used in the Brazos G area. And these are characterized kind of in different levels. As you can imagine, it varies by utility size in rural and urban and suburban classifications. We try and provide that level, fly at that level of detail to try and help all sizes with the discussion. We also use the Municipal Water Conservation Planning Tool to develop some generalized conservation savings and costs for typical utility classifications. And we describe that within the plan. And then we also aggregate and consider water loss audits for calculating replacement costs for WUGs reporting greater than 15% water losses. My main message to you here is that at present, the technical consultants have remained using this similar methodology as what you guys adopted in the previous plan. We're not proposing something new. That doesn't mean that this afternoon, when we talk with the subcommittee, if they want to contemplate possibly using something new, we might bring something back at the IPP. But just the way the lay of the land works is that as of right now, we've done it based on the methodology that's been approved by the planning group before. And also, giving some consideration to that 140 number, it's something that for fair means, oh, it's raining. For fair means or foul, we've all come to live with using that 140, at least in this method in regional planning. And what was laid out by the Water Conservation Advisory Council discusses more about starting at 140, a 1% decline over time, all the way out into the future, recognizing that by 2040, it may not be clear whether that could be accomplished or not. So it's much more nebulous. And because of that, our recommendation right now is to stick with what we've used in previous rounds. And but explore this further for potential consideration in the next regional planning cycle. So in that chapter, I digressed a little bit there, but in that chapter, we also talk about the benefits of advanced conservation. As we're being consistent with the previous planning cycle, we're improving the information regarding conservation savings and cost, updating that information. We're incorporating practices specific to Brazos G. And an important line here is that in previous rounds, the Brazos G planning group has not prescribed specific best management practices when they recommended advanced water conservation. Instead, you have in the past said we recommend advanced conservation. Here's a suite of different types of best management practices and allow the WUGs and wholesale water providers to self-select which particular best management practices are best suited for them. That's what's been done, at least in past planning cycles. Yes, sir.
When you looked at WUGs and all that, a lot of them are at 180, maybe 200. Mm-hmm. So give a feel for how much movement these would have to make to get to 140. Is it substantial?
Yes, in some instances, and not no surprise there, but usually even there, it's not a lot of water that they save. It'd just be a lot of significant movement proportionally for them. So the smaller guys that are up at some of the higher, you're really low when you start out, and then some folks will get, as they grow with rapid growth, it'll get real high, and then they'll come back down to the sweet spot, right? Mm-hmm. And the feel from looking at all the data is that with the advanced water conservation strategies, with the methodology we're using now, let me pull out my phone, only because I want to have the data exactly right to you. We have a total WUGs with needs of 234 WUGs with needs. That's the magic number right now as it stands. 70 of those WUGs, so 70 out of the 234 WUGs, don't have a strategy from the 21 plan. So these are guys that have a new shortage, all right? WUGs without need after conservation, so that's called second tier need. If you guys recall, we come up with a need, then we look at conservation and see if they meet that target threshold of 140. We apply that 1% reduction to get them down to 140. And when we do that, we then calculate the need after they've done conservation. So it's kind of like a second tier need to look at how far does conservation alone get them? And the answer is that roughly 17 of the WUGs have all their needs met simply with just advanced conservation. So it's not a lot, but there are 17 that at least have all their needs met with conservation. That means there's a larger number of entities that have to go further with more additional strategies than conservation. That's 217, as a matter of fact. And with those 217 WUGs, what the scope of work, I'm getting a little ahead here, so forgive me, but the scope of work committee, through the work they did last time that'll be reported in a later item, the scope of work committee directed us to look at the 21 plans. That's the adopted process that this group adopted last February. We looked at the 21 strategies, the 2021 plans strategies. And when we use those strategies, apply them to the second tier needs, we meet 57 WUGs needs. So that's with conservation and then using the 21 plan strategies. And what that means is that there remains 160 WUGs that if we take the advanced conservation methodology and we take the 21 plan's recommended water management strategies and apply those to sellers and purchasers and what standalone WUGs, that when we apply those, there are still 160 with some level of need. Now, I know full well I'm sitting here telling you numbers without showing you on a screen yet, and that's simply because we're still working with the scope of work committee, but I want to give you a sense of, we're working on the progress of the water management strategies that are going to be the fill of Chapter 5. This discussion here is talking about but one piece an important piece, conservation. What can we do with what we've got? And we look at the methodologies that were used in the previous round. We look at water loss and water loss audits that are being reported, self-reported by our WUGs in the region. And we're incorporating those together to identify the magnitudes of savings that can be done. And we're using the Water Development Board's water costing tool and the UCM to the unified costing model to characterize costs associated. But what we're not doing is telling them specifically which best management practice to use. And instead, we lay out in this subchapter all the examples that they might utilize so they can self-select.
So just a quick follow-up. This is a very important part of our plan, obviously. I mean, it's kind of what everything hinges on over 50 years. At the end of that, we plugged conservation as kind of a finish the number, so we got to make sure that we stay on track. Quick question. Does everybody keep the score the same on gallons per day? Irrigation's in some, not in others? Or is it
to the best that the Water Development Board has been able to parse out irrigation and other wholesale uses? Yes, but just as we spoke this morning in the policy recommendation, the policy group this morning, GPCDs that are used for regional planning vary by entity. The city of Dallas and the GPCDs that are calculated for that, you can have your residential versus their commercial and how those get embedded. And it's wildly different than, say, a small town in west of Fort Worth, yeah. Right? And so to the extent that our five categories of use that we use in regional planning, right? Manufacturing, irrigation, steam electric, mining, has been identified through water sales and reporting in the annual reports that go to the Water Development Board. Those amounts have been teased out to the extent they can based on those surveys. But you all know the surveys aren't perfect. So there's still commercial information that's embedded within WUGs. One of the recommendations from the policy group contemplates that a more refined depiction of GPCD should be contemplated by the board and the legislature for future rounds of planning, but that's not where we're at today.
Thank you.
Sure. But you
any
can
other
bet.
Questions for Tony before he goes
oh,
on?
I'm sorry.
I just was asking if anybody else had any questions before you went on.
One other quick question. The last BMP note there about water loss. Is there, because I really appreciate your summary of the tier one, tier two, the needs, the no strategies, but water loss is a significant issue. And so how is it being parsed out to give visibility as a percentage of the problem so that we understand that in context?
Excellent. The Water Development Board has provided a swath of water loss audits. I can't remember when they did that. There's a swath of water loss audits for all the WUGs within the region that they have water loss audits for. And we take and summarize that information. Is that in Chapter 7 that we do that? 5? Is it in 5?
Okay. So my question specifically then is, you said that there's 70 of 234 that have no strategies. How many WUGs do not have audits? I mean, is that a number that we know? And
I don't have it on the tip of my hand, but you can bet that that's what we're overlaying developing the recommended conservation strategies. So, like, you teed up my next slide very well.
Thank you.
In the development of our recommended strategies, we look at those water loss audits, and we essentially have a target efficiency of 15%. And essentially, we consider the water loss for calculating replacement. So WUGs reporting greater than 15% water losses, and that 15%, I'm not aware of any magic number associated with that, other than that's what this group adopted last round.
Okay.
But we flagged that 15%, And for everybody above that, we have recommended, we identify meter replacement or waterline repair and replacement. If we have an entity that says, yes, we are absolutely already doing that, we're repairing our water lines, that's our plan, like Waco did last cycle, then we'll identify that specifically for them in the plan and call it out. Otherwise, we might use a broader advanced water conservation strategy and note that, you know, meter replacement, water line repair are consistent with that strategy if we don't know specifically that they're planning on doing those types of things.
If we do what you just mentioned, will there be a target associated with the reduction of the loss?
It's to get it, if they're greater than 15,
let's say they're down to 15. Yeah,
that's it. If it's greater than 15, we're trying to get them down to 15.
I mean, we've talked about a 1% per year on other things. Mm-hmm. Have we discussed
a rate?
Yeah, a rate or a progression.
Well, my question with the 15% is, it seems like a number of years ago when water loss audits were, when we went from the once every 5 years to every year, it was, you know, we used to think, oh, if we have 10% water loss, we're doing great. But then when you consider like 10% water loss for Dallas or Houston might be like a day's production for a smaller utility. So it's not really an apples to oranges or apples to apples comparison. Mm-hmm. And when I went through the Water Development Board, when they do their water loss auditor training, they focus more on infrastructure leakage index, which is, you know, you're trying to get that as close to one as possible. So I would just throw that out there that we might want to, when we're communicating with the WUGs, is, you know, yeah, they might have 15%, but also make sure that they understand that what leakage index thing. And then My other comment on the previous slide was to just consider for WUGs, you know, we have 140 GPCD there. Some of the people that I work with on the WCAC, I mean, not like officially, but we'll kind of sit around and quiz each other like, where did we come up with that from? I don't know. It just seemed like a good idea at the time. But then you see other utilities move past that. So let's not look at that as a floor and think, oh, we hit 140 GPCD, we're done. You know, we can, if you can go further, then go further.
Yeah,
is my point. So.
And I think we could probably have some language in there to speak to that.
David Blackburn.
I heard a number a minute ago, and you said it, and I've already forgotten it, but the number of WUGs that do consistent water loss audits, what was that, 70?
I don't have the number of WUGs that have water loss audits. I don't have that. But I can see what the number 70 was, the number of WUGs that have needs that did not have 2021 recommended water management strategies.
I guess where I was heading with that is, wouldn't one of the, sorry, can you go back to that other slide for a second?
Sure.
You might have been through that, but wouldn't one of the BMP recommendations be to do water loss audits?
Absolutely.
And that be a criteria, and to have a plan for doing that every year, every other year, whatever it is.
So there are some rules, and I'm going flying off my the tip of my memory here, but there are rules for WUGs with that serve a certain number of people or number of connections. You have it? There you go. Sure, Ms. Chuen.
Hi, yes. So for water loss audit, like for all the retail public water suppliers with greater than 3,300 connections or more, or a financial obligation to TWDB, those entities are required to submit the audit every year by May 1st. And for all others who are serving a little bit smaller than that number, they're required to submit it every 5 years. But just because they are required to do so doesn't mean that they necessarily they do that. Based on my experience with other entities, so not all the entities submitted every year or every other 5 year per their requirement. We are not getting 100% and data from those suppliers, but we should get a good portion of that.
What is the difference between an audit and the water use survey that's required to be reported?
Oh boy. Well, the water use survey as a half the people in the room are looking at me knowingly. The water use survey is a pretty rigorously detailed it's pretty rigorously detailed annual recounting of the amount of intake, amount of distributed, if you have customers, how much you move to them, and it's submitted on an annual basis, I believe, and that then the Water Development Board will take that information and use it in a myriad of different ways. One, to cross-check, hey, is the buyer saying the same amount as the seller? And, you know, look at those type of things. They develop per capita usage out of it. The water use survey also, and I'm kind of focusing on the parts that are critical for regional planning, identifies the number of connections. There's a lot of small entities that can't afford to do big old water plans. And instead, they just look at their number of connections from year to year. And when we're doing our population estimates and we're talking to those small guys, they say all we've got is we've gone from 1,000 to 1,200 or 1,000 to 2,000 number of connections. And those are in those water use surveys. So that's the water use survey. The water loss audit, on the other hand, is a more detailed description. It has a whole, AWWA has an entire breakdown of how water loss can be characterized in terms of real and actual losses, reported losses. I won't hit all the minutiae with you, but at the end of the day, it's an entirely different reporting process to really dial in on the various ways that water is quote unquote lost, whether it be through accounting or inaccurate metering or actual real losses from broken pipes, fire hydrants that aren't necessarily for consumption, and other factors that come into play. And that's a different set of reporting.
So do we while we're considering those water loss audits on the larger WUGs, are we also looking at the water use surveys to the smaller ones who can't afford to participate in the audits? I guess that's
really we're looking at everybody that has a need.
And I think that, I guess where I'm going with this short discussion is that in the past, we've always been able to find water available through strategies to meet everyone's projected growth. We may be reaching a point where that's not a reality any longer. And it may be that we just simply refer back to the user and say, you've got to find other strategies because you're just we don't have any strategies we could recommend to you that are cost effective other than different conservation strategies. That's kind of the to me that's the hard part about where we're starting to get to. There's going to be difficult decisions that are going to be to be made at the local areas when we say we just don't have a strategy where you can keep using the water at that 140 rate.
And I think it's a telling tale that, you know, advanced conservation can play a role, but at least what we've seen so far with the needs we've identified with the advanced conservation, looking at the water loss audits, trying to identify those that are above 15%, looking at advanced water conservation and those guys that are over 140 GPCD. When we identify those and develop numbers, that solves 17 problems out of 260, right? And so that takes us to other strategies. Yes, sir.
Lisa, you got a question?
So my understanding of that water loss percentage, though, number there, is really what you couldn't account for. It's not really what you lost. So if you lose it through a leak or whatever, but you can identify the amount of gallons were in that leak, it's not in that percentage. That percentage is what you could not explain what happened to that water.
Yes.
So I always get a little bit confused. Why do we call it water loss? Because that's not really technically what that percentage represents.
I think it's called non-revenue water now.
Right.
It's like water that you put out, but you did not get revenue for it in one way or another.
Well, or that you don't know where it went.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was going to be.
Well, it is, but you lose water a lot of ways. You don't get revenue if the firefighters fight with that water. That's non-revenue water. But this is really, I don't know what happened to it. Usually some cities that don't change their meters out regularly, it's because they didn't have an accounting for the water. Or they could have a leak they don't know about, or they have connections they don't know about.
Right. That was going to be my point.
Yeah, go ahead, Jim.
We call it water loss, and so people are looking at leaks in the pipe and different things. We're losing water, and technically it's unaccounted for water. So when you look at it broadly and operating a system for years, it's unaccounted for water, and you may have meters that are not tracking demand that's out there. You may have leaks. You may have other things that in the system that are happening. So all of it's unaccounted for. And to Gary's point, when you talk about systems that can't afford to do a water loss survey or a study to be able to come back, if it's, and a lot of them can be done cost effectively for some of the smaller systems, but if you look at it, you look at the payback from implementing strategies to be able to recapture that water, and you explain that to a board that's there that could be very conservative, it's pretty obvious that my investment in this and going out to implement that to capture that water will pay back in a extremely short period of time, and it is the cheapest water that you are going to find rather than going out and putting in additional pumps or drilling another well or trying to expand an existing resource you have. And I think the Water Development Board also preaches that out there to systems. So how do you put that in the plan? It's just continuing to press that to systems that it's the most effective way to get water.
And I will say that to that point, the reason why we have the subsection and the content of the subsection and even the existence of the term second tier need is because the first go-to thing is advanced conservation. It's the cheapest water. Go there first, and then we'll say, what are the needs after conservation? And look at strategies for those second tier needs after conservation. So that's part and parcel of the language that's in the subsection that you have. If you guys want to bolster that language or anything like that, we're all ears. We've taken our crack at characterizing and checking all the boxes that we're providing the information that the Water Development Board asked for. But if there's narrative that the planning group would like to add or revise, you can let us know and we will incorporate those and track those changes.
Yeah, the one issue I know that when systems have a problem in implementing that is developing an additional resource, dropping a well or whatever, it's one decision before the board. You go, you get approval and you go out and you do the project. When you're doing water conservation or you do an audit, then you have to go implement, you have to report back. There's a lot of small pieces that go with it, so it tends to be somewhat tedious rather than just, this is very simple, just go buy water from this system or go do this. Well, part of that is also educating your board that this is what you need to do to be able to keep rates low. And rates low speaks a lot.
So we also, I've given a lot of attention to municipal water loss. And you're right, there's water loss is a kind of category. And I've been speaking to the municipal. We do speak to the other categories as well with similar methodological approaches. I'll just hit these briefly and wrap up on this chapter 5 section. Our target efficiency for irrigation. Yes, sir.
So just one
quick comment just to wrap up this on municipal that you know, sometimes a picture is worth a thousand words, and to raise awareness of this, I just think I don't want to oversimplify this, but it seems to me what I just heard, we need to find a way in the plan to elevate awareness of the criticality of this. And if it's through a tabular format or through a summary that can point to here's in the big scheme of things, here is where these systems are lacking a critical analysis of their system that could identify resources that we are chasing that we don't need to.
Well,
and so I don't want to speak out of turn here, but I just think there ought to be a way to capture that, and part of our obligation is just to raise awareness, because what Jim just said to me is, I mean, that's a big return on investment that doesn't require capital investment. It's just figuring out what's going on before you just race out to do stuff.
Yeah.
So.
All right. On irrigation, we use the same methodologies in the 21 plan for these various next categories. We reduce irrigation by use by 3% in 2030, 5% in 2040, and 7% from 2050 through 2080. And that's for all WUGs, all irrigation WUGs with needs. And then we include BMP recommendations. And we summarize from Water Development Board information that they've published, kind of have a detailed breakdown. The intent is to take the available information base that's out there for each of these, municipal, irrigation, so on and so forth, and compile and summarize it to do exactly what Mr. Weldon's saying, to make the case for why conservation is important, be clear on what it can do and its immediate benefits, but also be clear it doesn't solve everything for everybody. It's an important, critical element. And we have common irrigation best management practices that we include. And then present how much kind of savings and costs associated with those best management practices from the board. So again, we're not prescribing a specific set of best management practices to agricultural users. We're rather presenting them for their consideration and identifying conservation as a broad category, and you can consider these. So we're not being too prescriptive. For manufacturing, industrial, so mining and manufacturing, target efficiency was to reduce industrial use by 3% in 2030, 5% in 2040, and 7% in 2050 through 80 for all industrial WUGs with needs. And then take the same information base, do the exact same exercise. For steam electric, no conservation recommendations are suggested, and this was the same as the last round, due to the widely differing water use among the different facilities. There's just so many different facilities out there that the planning group, at least last cycle, elected not to have a conservation strategy recommended specifically for steam electric. And we see, other than the fact that it's dialed significantly back already, just due to plant facility closures and things like that, we're not recommending any change from that. For livestock, same thing. We didn't have any recommendations for conservation with livestock. As far as calculated savings, there's 159 WUGs in Brazos G with GPCD above 140. The potential savings with advanced conservation is approximately 29,800 acre feet in 2030, up to 189,000, almost 190 by 2080. And so, Kenny, I don't know about a graphic, but that sure is that's a lake, you know, by 2080 in conservation. And I can make that a graphic. That's not hard at all. I think that's a important statement. There are 44 WUGs with reported water loss greater than 15%. The potential savings with water loss reductions, and again, forgive me, I know, you know, when I say water loss, I'm using that very broadly, just with the Water Development Board's terminology, but the savings are approximately 6,600 acre feet in 2030, up to 8,500 acre feet by 2080. So again, for non-municipal WUGs, the calculated conservation savings, there's 18 counties in Brazos G with reported irrigation needs during the 2030 through 2080 period. The potential conservation savings range from 6,500 to 15,000 acre feet in 2080. By 2080, there are 14 counties with manufacturing needs. The potential savings there for conservation is from 300 to 1,000 acre feet. Again, manufacturing is not as large of a demand center in Region G. There are 14 counties in Brazos G with reported mining needs during the planning horizon, and the potential savings from conservation range from 600 to 1,600 acre feet.
Any questions before we go to Chapter 9 on what Tony has just gone over, part of the conservation?
All right. Chapter 9, implementation in comparison to the previous water plan. So this is just an outline. There are three sections that are in our Chapter 9. We're building off of what used to be, I can't remember which chapter it was in the previous plan, but it's now been made Chapter 9. And that's where one of the key emphases this go-around, this cycle that's relatively new, is the focus on implementation. You will remember that we went through quite a bit of infeasibility exercise, more so than any other region in the state, I can promise you. And as part of that exercise, when we were doing our surveys, we hit everybody up on the status of their implementation. We're pulling those surveys and that information together to inform on this first section of Chapter 9 regarding the status of implementation of the 21 strategies, the 21 regional water plan strategies, and pulling that into a required table that the Water Development Board has provided us. That's the first initial chunk of the discussion in Chapter 9. Following that is a discussion, and this is also new, that the board is requiring that we provide a discussion on the regional water planning area's progress in achieving economies of scale. And so I'll get to that in a second. But and then we're lastly comparing to the previous regional water plan, what the difference is going to look like. So with those implementation requirements, the planning group must report the level of implementation, the identified reported implementation impediments to the development of previously recommended strategies and strategy projects that have affected progress in meeting needs. If you'll recall, my general characterization of it was a lot of folks haven't built things either because for those large projects, they weren't feasible to get done in their long-term reservoir projects. On the groundwater side, if projects weren't already implemented, it was typically because they haven't seen a drought or record or a drought that pushed them to the point to justify the expenditure yet. That's my high-level characterization of all the responses that we got. Point being is that we have to summarize that content in those tables, and the information has to be collected through a spreadsheet tool that was provided by the board, and we have roughly 380 water management strategy and strategy projects that we're populating in that table. And then that survey process, we have to go through and populate all that information and track all the changes from the last plan. As part of it, the Water Development Board encourages the Regional Water Planning Group members to be involved in, you know, getting the WUGs and the wholesale water providers to engage with the technical consultants on all of this. You guys have been doing that for years, and you prompted us to do it. And I would just say, please continue what you're doing. Because every bit of input we get is helping and refine the picture. And then we're putting it all in the appropriate format of what needs to be done, and we're using various sources that are either provided by the Water Development Board or other agencies and funding information, things like that, to compile this table. There are a list of questions that are specifically identified by statute. Has the sponsor taken affirmative voter actions? You're going to remember that these kind of align with what you guys adopted earlier in the year on the infeasible strategy exercise. What's the status of the project? If the project's not been started or no longer being pursued, tell us why. And then please select one or more project impediments. If the impediment's not listed, choose other. And what funding types are being used for the project? As you can imagine, as I'm sure you guys are more plugged in than I am, that with Senator Perry's activities and thinking about implementation of projects in the state water plan. These questions go right to informing the Water Development Board that they can take all the region's answers to these questions and put them together and have a more cohesive picture in the state water plan of what are impediments, what are things that are slowing things down. That's where these questions are deriving from. And then with regards to progress in achieving economies of scale, the planning groups must include an assessment of the region's efforts to encourage cooperation between WUGs for the purpose of achieving economies of scale and incentivizing strategies that are regional strategies. And that assessment has to include the number of recommended strategies in the 21 plan and the number of recommended strategies in the 26 plan that serve more than one WUG. The number of recommended strategies in the 21 plan that serve more than one WUG and have been implemented since 21, and a description of the efforts the planning group has made to encourage strategies and strategy projects to serve more than one WUG. So as we're writing up Chapter 9, you can bet we're going to talk about all the activities we've been doing over the course of the last 4 years in engagement and in developing strategies for that serve more than one WUG and getting those WUGs involved. The board is also going to be providing us data that we have not yet got yet as a present to assist in that characterization. And then I won't regale you with all these details because you've seen it in every plan, but we have to have a, kind of a numerical comparison of demands and supplies and the droughts of record and really all the key components of the plan. We compare to the 21 plan just to show the differences. And y'all well know the projections are going to be the main driver, and some of the changes to steam electric power generation, things like that, are going to be some of the principal drivers to the changes that are resulting in the differences between the 21 and the 26 plan. And then lastly, I'll hold up there.
So Chapter 9, any questions before he goes to Chapter 10? Okay, go ahead, Tony.
Chapter 10, very briefly. For the IPP, this chapter is really brief. For the final plan, this chapter gets long, simply because this chapter discusses public participation. A subsection of public participation that's new this planning round is that we have to speak specifically to engagement to rural areas. And frankly, I'm going to write in there that I have written in there. The intent was to capture that your instructions to the technical consultant was to engage. You didn't even differentiate between big and small. And that's what's been done across the region. And by default, we are engaging the rural areas because we're trying to engage everybody. And to the extent that I can say that tale in a much more professional manner than what I just said, that's what I'm attempting to do in Chapter 10, is say exactly that. Also, we discussed the planning website, the coordination with WUGs and wholesale water providers and the other planning regions and the liaisons. There's a lot of discussion in there about just how the planning group interacts and meets all the required rules, holds its meetings, hold public hearings, and facilitates responses. The part that grows is that in Chapter 10, we won't have it in the IPP, is that when we get public comments, when we get agency comments, and when we get Water Development Board comments, we will add those, and that'll be a lot of our work in next year. We'll be adding those to Chapter 10, but for right now, we'll just have placeholder text that says that is to be developed subsequent to submittal of the IPP. So that's why Chapter 10 is really small right now, because it's supposed to contain all that, and it will for the final plan. And then at the end will be a statement of effect saying when the planning group made adoption formally of the plan. And I intend to, before our meeting where we have adoption of the IPP, I'll have a statement, it's the adoption of the IPP, and then we'll change that for the final plan, of course. So today, to wrap up my presentation, if there aren't any questions on Chapter 10, then I'm not asking for any formal action. I am asking for you to take a look at these chapters, simply because it'll make life so much easier on you in February, because we've been rolling out chapters all along. The scope of work committee is going to be likely having one to two more meetings where we're churning through, and you'll hear about that on that item, but we're churning through strategies and conservation and things of that nature. And then we'll be coming back to you with a recommended IPP, and we're looking for, if you've got language now, it's a far easier ingesting of that that information now while we're preparing the IPP. I will tell you, technically, we're trying to work towards the end of the year for preparing the IPP. We're reaching out to folks. We're meeting. I think we're meeting with College Station tomorrow. We're meeting with other WUGs. Whoever reaches out, we're trying to get with them. We're sharing what information we have. I'll tell you, I'm frankly telling them that I hope they find something wrong in the information that I have, and that I want them to change every bit of it to where it's correct to their picture. And then we will work with them to follow the board rules to reflect them accurately in the regional water planning to the extent that we can with all these regional planning rules that we have. That's what I'm telling folks when I'm meeting with them. And as we do that, we're engaging. We will be bringing strategy information in swaths over the next several scope of work committee meetings to evaluate with the scope of work committee so that hopefully they will have a recommendation for your consideration when you meet again. And then also what goes along with those strategies is impact assessment. We're kind of simultaneously doing that along with the development of the strategy and analysis of the strategies and costing. We're doing all of those with the intent that those will be brought for your consideration for the IPP. And even then, it can still be changed.
Any questions for Tony before I let him sit down? Yes, Kenny,
so go ahead. I'm going to be the broken record today, I guess. Tony, you just talked about the summary in Chapter 9. Could you explain how it captures what we talked about in relative to Chapter 5? Because when I look at this comparison summary, and I think this is to the point I was making earlier, if it's an issue, then it needs to be captured in these comparison charts, for example, to say how many plans were in place in 21 versus 26. Mm-hmm. And if there's no change in the amount of strategies that are in place, that's an indicator for us. So Chapter 5, I guess my question is it going to be summarized somehow in Chapter 9?
It's all going to, the answer is yes, in the sense that as we're engaging with WUGs, we're taking previous strategies and saying, is this still valid? Or we're looking at it and saying, it's not sufficient. All right, what are we going to do? We're also looking at what have you not implemented yet?
Right.
Which is part of Chapter 9, right?
I'm just asking a simple question here, because you talked about the 234 and the 70. And the 70 really got my attention, because is that 70 going to be identified in Chapter 9 in some kind of comparison to say 70 has not changed or 70 is increasing?
Well, the 70, there will be a discussion on why the 70 have emerged. Okay. Without a doubt, because we're going to have a comparison of needs, and we'll show, hey, there's we'll not just talk about it by magnitude of need, but we'll also talk about it by the number of entities with needs, right? And if we see that 70, then we'll have a discussion in Chapter 9 about how and why, what were the drivers of that. But where I'm struggling is in Chapter 5, we're talking about conservation, right? Unless you're talking about the remainder of Chapter 5, the recommended strategies. And I just wasn't sure exactly which one you were referring to.
What I was talking about is you walked us through this comparison of 234 with needs, Tier 1, 70 of those have no strategies. Then you said Tier 2 is 17 met with
advanced conservation,
217 not met. To me, that's a really good capture of a snapshot in time of the condition of water conservation and to compare that in 21 versus 26, or where are we making progress in the implementation of these?
That is a simple question. I just didn't understand
it.
The answer is yes. We will absolutely have that comparison.
Okay.
Because I'm showing it here, and it speaks volumes, and so we intend on having this. It might modify or change a little bit in terms of the numbers.
Right, so what caught my attention is in your slide where you have the comparison to previous plans, you don't, I mean, and I know you're limited, you're trying to be concise and brief, but you know, you've got things here that we traditionally think about, which is supply and demand. But it's a subset of need that we spent a lot of time talking about. And
yes.
So it's kind of worthy of a bullet to keep it in front of us and keep us thinking about, you know, what we talked about. So
yeah. I thought I had needs on there, but definitely the comparison of needs and breaking that down to where it means something like these. Yes, we'll have that.
So I'm just trying to simplify the discussion, because when I hear needs, I think of population growth or increased demand, but conservation is a need. I mean, it's semantics, I understand, but it's also the being able to display it in a summary that keeps it keeps our focus on it, I guess, is what I'm talking about.
Yeah, the way I look at it is in the parlance that the Water Development Board has in terms of supply and demand and then the resultant need, then strategies, there's this subsection, like you're describing, that is a characterization of how have needs and the picture of needs evolved over the planning cycle. And that's not just a simple show the net need here and net need here, but rather it's also providing a conversation on, all right, well, what's actually happening with WUGs out there, which is why I give you like this summary. So we'll have something like this and probably some variations onto it for each of them, both supply, demand. We'll look at conservation, how we compare to the previous plan. I think that's going to fold into the discussion of, well, what's not been implemented? And it's going to reinforce, you know, what are we doing here, right?
Okay. All right. Any other questions for Tony? Okay, thank you, Tony.
Thank you.